on Pilot TV this week, we're getting very, very cross indeed. Alex Cross, in fact, as the James Patterson crime series adaptation returns to Prime Video. Plus, we're slipping into the secret shoes of the security services with Betrayal on ITV and exploring life through the lens of Mackenzie Crook in Small Profits on BBC Two. I'm James Dyer, and welcome to Pilot TV, your essential guide to every show that matters, and a podcast that is feeling surprisingly intimate today, mainly as myself and co-pilot Steph Seelan are currently ensconced in the coziest of recording studios. More a booth, really, Steph, would you say?
We're on each other's laps.
Yeah,
but we're trying, it's very close.
I can't help noticing you've essentially scooched yourself into a corner to get as far away from me as possible.
The proximity is too much, yeah. James.
So the reason we are in this booth is to compensate for the fact that while we are very, very close to each other, Boydie couldn't be further away because he is dialing in from the sunny sands of Santa Monica.
Yes,
at the tail end of his massive Apple Jolly. How is it, Boydie? How's it been?
It's been excellent. Yeah, it's been good. I can't complain. Looking out now outside my window, just to kind of on the way to the beachfront.
Crucially, Boyd, have you used the pool?
I haven't used the pool yet, to be honest. Yeah, been too busy. But maybe I'll have a quick dip before I fly out this afternoon.
Get your trunks on, babe. You can do it.
Yeah, time for a quick dip, maybe. I'm certainly going to walk up Santa Monica Beach to the Venice Beach, I think.
Yeah, please buy me a souvenir gift. Thank you.
Yeah, have a go at the Muscle Beach.
I was going to say, that's where Muscle Beach is.
Outdoor gym.
Yeah.
Hitting the weights.
Yeah, that's definitely what I'm going to do.
Okay, now, Boydie, are you going to fill us in on everything that's happened there now, or do you want to wait until the news section?
Well, it's a good question, yeah. I think probably wait till the news, because that's all the news I have.
There's not much other news. There's a lot of Apple news.
There's so much Apple news. I've had so many emails.
So much Apple news.
Okay.
Yeah. Fine. Well, we're all here, which is very, very exciting. So let's kick off with what we've been watching. Now, Boydie, you had an 11-hour flight from here to LA. Obviously, loads of time for you to catch up on lots of things on your sofa list. What did you watch on the plane?
Well, you're absolutely right. And remember, regular listeners will, I'm sure, remember, etched in their memories, that the last time I went to America, which was in New Year when I went to New York, I watched like two-thirds of season one of The Pit. Well, I've now finished season one of The Pit.
Hey.
So, yes.
On the plane.
I watched, I think, 5 episodes, 5 hours of it, I think I had left, and I've consumed them all voraciously. And let's just say, I've already said this, but when HBO Max launches here towards the end of March, we will, of course, have The Pit to review properly. But, I mean, there's no point. We normally don't share what we think of shows in advance, but you have to, because I've finished the whole thing, and it is incredible. It is such brilliant TV. It's kind of... it's almost awe-inspiring because the complicated medical cases they have to deal with are so brilliantly explained, and it's so complicated. And then there's always about 8 different things happening at the same time within the setting of the hospital, which is, by the way, one gigantic big set. They pretty much built a hospital in LA, I think in the Warner Brothers studios in LA, here in LA. And so it's like a functioning emergency room, pretty much. It's down to, like, apparently if you open the drawers, you know, there are genuine medical supplies on set at all times. Anyway, it's just an incredible the big thing that happens of it, I won't spoil, but there's a, you know, it's like one day in the lives of all the doctors and nurses in the emergency room in The Pit. And then there's this huge thing that happens kind of in the last third of the series, and it's just spectacular and distressing and unbelievable. And there are moments, I think I mentioned, I said to James Lodge, because James had watched the whole thing already on his various flights, on his various junkets that he does. and I think he mentioned how, I was saying, oh my God, there's so many horrible, vivid, gory moments, right, to deal with, because it just unflinchingly shows you medical procedures of all kinds. And there's no limit. It's not like a network show. It's like there's effing and jeffing and incredibly gory injury detail, as they often describe it, and other incredibly vivid gory scenes. But the one that I wasn't expecting was there's a birth scene, right, that is absolutely extraordinary. It suddenly cuts to the business end of a woman giving birth, if you like, without wanting to be too grotesque about it. And you're like, oh, okay, they're going to show us that. They're just going to show us that. And, fair enough. It's all nature. It's all natural, you know.
Well,
we're just going to see.
I feel like, how many babies have you seen being born?
None.
Okay. So no. I imagine that
in a live situation, you mean?
Live situation. I mean, being someone who has given birth to an adult, I wouldn't have even wanted to watch that myself giving birth because it's so horrifying, but obviously beautiful and wonderful as long as you have an epidural. But yeah, I can imagine. Oh, I mean, looking forward to that. Why is it so?
There's another thing that happens, not connected to the birth scene. That was just the first thing that came to my mind. There's literally a millisecond moment as well when you see a penis with a thing coming out of it, like a catheter or whatever the thing is. And I was like, oh, they literally just suddenly shows you this moment without any warning or anything. And, oh, okay, and that we're going to see that as well. It is unbelievably brilliantly well done, and it's also creatively, you get involved with the characters, you get to know the characters, and they're so well drawn, they're so fantastically cast, like the young students. It's their first day, right, on the job for like this gaggle of young students we meet, and they're all so well drawn, those characters. It's a fantastic
series. So deserving of all the plaudits it's getting.
Yeah. Okay. 100% deserving. Yeah, yeah. And the other thing I watched on the plane, no one will be surprised, but I rewatched.
Oh God.
The most, no, what? What do you think I'm going to say?
It's either going to be Seinfeld or Curb. I'm saying it's Curb, isn't it?
No, neither of those. It's the other one. It's Alan Partridge. I watched the entire series of
Good Choice.
The one that's just, the Alan Partridge series that just went out, where he deals with mental health. it's me, Alan Partridge, and it just really works for me on long flights. Alan Partridge, I just kind of put it on. It's my kind of comfort zone, if you like. But it made the flight absolutely whiz by.
Yes.
The 11
you
hours.
Resisted the urge to raw dog the entire journey.
I didn't do any raw dogging at all. I had something going on at all times, whether it be TV shows on the screen or magazines to read or work to do. I did quite a lot of work, actually.
Did you?
Because obviously this is a work trip. Yeah, I can't just be on
a
jolly all the time.
God, you're such a swat. Oh, no.
I know. It's grotesque, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Well, we'll hear more about Boydie's absurd jolly when we get to the news section. But is that it? That's your complete watching for this week?
Yeah, that's pretty much it.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
I think so. Yeah.
Stephanie.
Oh, God, it's official.
Oh, it's formal. It's formal.
So I have to say, one of the shows that we're reviewing, I have watched in its entirety.
You can't say now.
I'm not going to say now, but I'm just saying that's why I haven't watched anything else. Apart from, I watched something, and it sounds really random, but when we get to the other show that I've watched, it might make some sense. I watched this random show called Ancient Giants of North America on Prime.
Right.
Right. It's a documentary, a 2022 documentary that examines the existence of these prehistoric, like skeletal remains of giants, and the fact that there might have been actual race of giants.
Using the word. I think the word documentary is doing a lot of heavy lifting.
No, it is. It's honestly, it's like all this, footage of people like digging up these gigantic skeletons and in North America, and all these mounds which have got like the remains of giants in. It's really good. It's fascinating. I know you're looking at me like, but this, you should love this, because this is like, it seems like it's sci-fi, but it's an actual thing.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, it's so, anyway, not for everyone. It's very special interest, but I'd gone into a whole phase of like, oh, this is really, God, this kind of stuff's really interesting, mate, you know. I'm just saying. It's
okay.
2022, Prime Video, Ancient Giants of North America. I would also just, I need to issue an apology because I got what I'm calling a cat lash in the office, because on the last podcast when we talked about what we were watching, right, and Boyd mentioned that cat show. Do you remember that cat
David Baddiel.
The David Baddiel cat show, right, I said that cats don't love you. And three colleagues came up to me and told me that their cats were upset with me. Okay, make of that what you will.
They had been listening.
So Gina, our friend Gina, lovely editor Gina, she said, Bernie and Freddie are really upset with you. And I was like, oh, shit, why? And I was honestly thinking, who the fuck are Bernie and Freddie? But then she was like, oh, no, they're really... And she made the claim that her cat couldn't love her more, and if it would love her any anymore, it would crawl up into her womb. That's what she literally said to me. And I was like, wow, okay.
That's upsetting.
I said, I'm sorry. So if anyone else out there was offended by me saying that cats don't love you, which they definitely don't, I'm sorry. Sorry, not sorry.
Right.
As the youth say.
Okay, so you've offended all cat owners.
Yeah, they hate me.
Good.
It's a cat lash. That's an official cat lash.
It's a week well spent, I'm saying.
Okay.
I've watched more than you have. It's cheating a little bit because I've dipped in and out of a number of different things this week.
Okay.
So I ploughed on with Waiting for the Out. I've seen all except the last episode, I think, at this point. Really enjoying that, even though, you know, Steph, you were a massive hater, but that's absolutely fine.
No, I'm going to go back to that because I feel bad. I listened back to that episode and I feel bad. I'm going to watch it. So don't, you know, it's fine.
Don't spoil it.
Yeah.
I will say the lead in that show I now see in a very different light because of another show that I've been watching this week because I have been pressing on. I say pressing, I haven't been pressing on with it. I've started watching How to Get to Heaven from Belfast, which is the Lisa McGee show, which we're reviewing on Pilot Plus because it is embargoed, so I can't review it here. But I've watched a goodly chunk of that as well. But I can't tell you what I think because, you know, embargoed. I have finished Steel on Prime, which I had a good old time with. I had it in my head. So I read somewhere, I thought there was going to be a big twist. I don't know if I actually read that or I dreamt it or made it up, who knows. But I had decided in my head what the ending was going to be. And I saw everything through the prism of what I knew the ending was all the way through it, only to get to the end and find out I could not have been more off if I had tried.
So you just made it up
in my head. I decided, I've outwitted this show. I know exactly where it's going. Let me tell you, I did not know where it was going.
That's such a James way of approaching
isn't
it.
Isn't it? He's like, I know exactly what's happening.
Yeah. Basically, you've decided you know better than all the people who've created the show you're watching.
Exactly that. And was wrong. Yes, I was disabused of that notion by the time I got to the end, but I had a really good time with it. Enjoyed Steel. That was great. I enjoyed that. What else did I watch this week? I have watched another chunk of Your Friends and Neighbours, the second series of which landed on Apple TV Plus. Landed on the screener, on Apple TV Plus. It doesn't come out until April. But the first three had been on there.
This
since
is
Christmas.
John Hamm.
Yes, and they put the next three up. So I've been watching more of that. And obviously cannot tell you what I've been thinking of, but let's just say I really like that show. What else have I watched this week? I finally got around to watching Taylor Swift, The End of an Era, the documentary special.
Oh, hallelujah.
And it's really good.
Yes, I told you it was really good.
I haven't finished it. Okay. I've just started it. But it's really good. I really enjoyed the first episode, which is all around the Wembley shows. And I obviously went to a Wembley show, so that was very exciting.
Actually, just reminded me of something else I watched on that music front. I watched the Grammys. I arrived as the Grammys were getting underway. And of course, my friend Ben Winston produced the Grammys.
And even now, Woody, because we can see you, because we have you on video here, you are wearing an exact replica of Chapel Roan's dress as we speak, as we're doing this, this podcast, which is extraordinary.
I mean, you may joke, what I am wearing is an exact replica of Justin Bieber's outfit that he wore on stage, which is basically pants and socks.
Yeah.
Yeah, and nothing else.
I loved his performance, though. His performance was really good. Yeah.
That's what I was going to say. He's absolutely brilliant. I've suddenly decided I really like Justin Bieber.
Boydie is a believer. Talented. This is a thing.
I am a believer.
Oh, my God.
And watching Hayley, she was so, like, overwhelmed by his brilliance.
Yeah.
That it was really sweet. It was just a really sweet moment. Yeah. So that's almost like I arrived, plonked my stuff down in my hotel room, turned on the TV, and within seconds, Justin Bieber arrived on stage in his pants doing that incredible performance.
I also loved the Lauryn Hill D'Angelo tribute at the Grammys. I thought that was delightful. So thank you to Ben because I thought that was lovely. Yeah.
Anyway, sorry I interrupted.
No, that's fine.
On about
that's
Taylor
fine.
Swift.
Unbelievable, derailing my Taylor Swift anecdote. But yes, great documentary. I highly recommend it. What else do I watch? Here's a curveball for you, Boydie. I watched the first episode of Broadchurch.
What?
And let me tell you why. Because when we reviewed Under Saltmarsh, Boydie said the gold standard, the gold standard for UK crime dramas was Broadchurch. And it occurred to me, I'd never watched Broadchurch.
You never watched Broadchurch?
Let me qualify that. I definitely started it. I don't know how many episodes I watched, but I definitely didn't finish even the first season or series, let alone the subsequent two. So I thought, I must address this because Boydie said it is the gold standard of TV crime drama. So I am now watching Broadchurch.
Wow.
Oh, good. And?
It's very good. This is not controversial. It's really good.
Yeah.
David Tennant on irascible form. It's a lot of fun.
Can you do us a favour? Can you, before you get to the end, can you record what you think is going to happen at the end of Broadchurch?
So, hilariously, that's a good... I knew the ending of Broadchurch because obviously it was in the popular, I knew it, but brilliantly, because my memory is failing and because as we talked about, my one in, one out configuration of my brain, I genuinely can't remember anything about how it ends. So I'm basically blind. Like, I don't know what's going to happen. So that's quite exciting.
Okay. You do that thing, like record what you think is going to happen.
Right.
And yeah, I'd like to.
So like with Steel, I'll just approach it through the prism of what I think is going to happen.
Please do that.
Okay. I'm going to do that. And then the other thing I did was I was sitting on Saturday night and I felt the need to begin a rewatch.
West Wing.
No, I toyed with West Wing. I toyed with Game of Thrones. I toyed with Battlestar Galactica. I considered The Wire. I even thought, oh, maybe The Shield, though. I did do that quite recently. And in the end, I stopped because I couldn't decide. But I feel like I do need to do one because, and again, it's that thing remember they did that whole thing last year or the year before, where there was some sort of psychological study and they were talking about how rewatching old shows is emotional regulation because you know how it's going to end. It's comforting and your brain, it doesn't engage that part of your brain where there's uncertainty because you know what's going to happen. So there's no stress, there's no tension, there's no drama in that regard. You just enjoy it. And so it's all about self-care. So I thought that is what I need at the moment in these troubled times is a rewatch.
That's so true though. You know how sometimes, I don't know about you guys, you know when you watch something and actually you're just like, I've got to fucking get to the end of this because it's really stressing me out. I need to know what happens. And then you think, oh, I can watch this again and feel relaxed. So true.
So that's what I need.
You do Game of Thrones.
I really want to do Game of Thrones, but that's quite the undertaking because there is a lot of it. So, but
you should do it.
I'm considering it.
Game of Thrones is one of those things that whenever it's on, you know, when you're just on your Sky or whatever, I will always watch an episode.
Oh no, I can't do that.
What?
No, because I can't watch things from the middle. Like, if I'm going to watch something, I need to watch it from the start to the end. I don't like diving in. It upsets me.
Oh,
I'm a completionist. So yeah, can't do that. But yeah, so that's the bit that I haven't decided yet. What is my rewatch going to be? I'm leaning towards Game of Thrones.
I think you should do Game of Thrones.
Okay, good to know.
Okay.
But finish
Broadchurch, please.
But what the genius thing is that now that obviously my brain is having to eject whole shows, you know, in their entirety so I can fit in new ones, all I have to really do is wait until Game of Thrones is up next on the deletion list.
Yeah.
And then I can essentially rewatch it for the first time.
God, to be you, James. Do you know what's really disturbing, listeners? You can't see, like, usually I just see James like a newsreader from his shoulders
from
up.
From the waist
and,
up.
The waist up. And now I can see like his whole bottom half.
I am clothed.
I know. It's really.
Is he doing a Justin Bieber?
Yes.
No.
I'm just hearing
boxer
shorts and socks.
Yeah.
That's how we record here in this booth.
Yeah.
Okay, good. Well, that was fun. And also one of the shows that we are going to review later is Cross. I'm not going to tell you what I think about that, but I saw all of the first season of that. We got into this and at the beginning of season 2, helpfully, Prime put together a previously on Cross, and it gives you a little sizzle reel of everything that happened in the first season. And I got to the end of it, I was like, I don't remember a fucking thing of that. Absolutely no recollection.
That's funny you should say that, because I thought, oh great, they've put a sizzle reel, so even though I hadn't watched the first season, I'll find out what happens. I was like, none the fucking wiser.
Yeah,
it was
very, very, very bad sizzle reel, because it didn't tell you anything. It showed you lots of like sort of vignettes from the first season, but it didn't put any of them in context or explain what any of it meant. So it was just almost like a mnemonic. It was just scenes.
Yeah, you needed to have watched the first series
to even understand.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was wild. Yeah. So I was just like, that. I don't know what the purpose of that sizzle was, but it could have been done a lot better. Anyway, we'll get to that a little bit later on. Shall we have a listener question?
Oh, yes, please.
Yes, we do have a question. This one is from Bahar. I apologise if I'm not pronouncing that correctly. But Bahar says, first of all, welcome to Steph. I'm enjoying the anticipation each episode of not knowing if I'll hear her or Kay, who I do miss. Lovely to have you. I had this question sitting in my drafts for so long, mainly because I didn't want to subject Kay to reading it. But now that the postbag duties lie with James, I thought it was time to send it. Ready?
Yeah.
I'm no stranger to sci-fi. I may have previously mentioned that I'm one of the tens of people who watches and loves Foundation. Yes, we are Legion. I love Doctor Who, Star Wars, Wheel of Time, and all other big sci-fi franchises, and I've grown up with a healthy dose of sci-fi media, be it TV, films, or books. However, I hate to admit that my one blind spot is Star Trek.
You're no sci-fi.
Right. I've always wanted to get into it. I'm not scared of long episode counts or decades of lore, see the previously mentioned Doctor Who. I've spent years searching the internet for answers on how to get into Star Trek, only to be met with varying opinions on best starting points, essential episodes, and endless lists. It is overwhelming. It only occurred to me to ask the pod after your foray into Buffy some time back. So my question for the pod is, Can you give me a starting point? How does one go about tackling the decades of episodes, spin-offs, movies, characters, and world-building? I should mention that I have seen Picard, which is an odd way to end this. To say, by the way, I have watched like a whole series of Star Trek. Although, Picard is definitely not where you want to start.
It's not the same. Right, so yes, if Kay had got this question, she would have probably cried on the floor because it's not her bag. I love Star Trek. I don't profess to be an expert at all, but when James showed us this question, I was went back into my Star Trek and I thought, okay, what to me is my beloved Star Trek? And I want this to be a better answer, but I think it really comes down to the Star Trek you grew up with. Okay, so for me, like Star Trek The Next Generation, that series was is probably my most beloved. That and Star Trek, sorry, I'm saying that and I'm changing my mind already because I do love the Scott Bakula one.
Oh, I'm
I do.
I'm sorry, what?
I do.
Enterprise. You are going to like shoo it. For Enterprise.
No, I'm not. I love Deep Space Nine as well, but I love. Do you not love him? Do you hate that one?
I mean, it's not good.
Why do you think it's not good? I think he's fantastic in
it. Oh my God, so many reasons.
Okay, go on then.
It was an unnecessary prequel. The time period wasn't great. The effects were ropey. The plots were weird. The fact that there was the bridge crew was entirely homogenous was not good either. The fact that, I don't know, it all happened on the fucking holodeck, that's not a great start either. So many problems. The Zindi War, I think it started to pick up with the Zindi War, but, you know, that was a blip, should we say, an anomaly in an otherwise quite bland show.
Okay, fine. Well, James will go into this in great detail. But yeah, I would say Deep Space Nine is beloved to me. Benjamin Sisko as the captain.
Yes.
I think he was
the best
wonderful.
Of all of them.
Yeah, would you say? Oh,
without a doubt.
Interesting.
Yes, not even close.
Okay, and the other thing that I was going to mention in the Star Trek joy, of all of the myriad of Star Trek films, I do love the recent films.
Okay, no, that's good. Yeah,
is it okay? Right, Zachary Quinto, I'm going to say something really controversial. I think he's the greatest Spock.
Oh my God.
I'm so sorry.
That is controversial.
I know.
Oh my, I mean, you just, as James
love,
would say.
No, I love
as James would say, you've dived in off the deep end.
I just think he is incredible. He brings a whole new dimension to it. It's not just that the technology is advanced. I think he brings an emotional depth, ironically, that I really enjoy.
And are you saying Leonard Nimoy did not have emotional depth?
I'm not, no. I love Zachary Quinto. I think he brings an emotional depth, and it's not just because of like the technological advancements of the films. So, I just think he's... what Boyd, look, you look like you're going to kill me. What
he
is
does.
It?
He's tell so
me.
Furious.
You're saying that Leonard Nimoy did not have emotional depth. That's Spock, the man who co-created this incredible, indelible
right.
character.
No, I'm not besmirching the good name of Leonard Nimoy. I'm just saying that
I think it's
for
a besmirch.
It's not a classic besmirch at all. It isn't. I'm saying that I really think that Zachary Quinto delivers wow. something to that character which was much needed. I can't have a Nimoy backlash.
I can't believe you've offended all cat owners and now Leonard Nimoy's entire fan base.
Okay. Yeah. No. I love him. I'm just saying for me personally, Zachary Quinto is the best Spock. Okay, am I going to have to go into hiding?
Yes.
Yes. Yes.
Okay. All right,
yes.
James, just...
Could I just say, though,
yes.
that we've had this... We've done this before, haven't
I know.
We, James?
Yes, we have.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. I'm just saying, have I gone mad?
But we've done this in different ways. I'm not sure if we've done it in quite this way. But anyway, it bears repeating, I think.
We did it in the way that we actually all agreed to watch the classic episode, The City on the Edge of Forever. Right?
I
do you remember?
I think we did. I think it was we did one of the Deep Space Nine episodes. I can't remember. Might have been in the Pale Moonlight.
We did that as well. Yeah. I think we. I definitely rewatched.
I feel like Kay might have enjoyed Deep Space Nine.
She didn't. Oh, spoiler. Okay.
She would enjoy The City on the Edge of Forever more. Mm. Which
would she?
Yes.
I think she would.
Yes, she would. She would, because it's a proper classic. Episode and a proper dilemma, and you know it's got Joan Collins in it.
Does it take place in space? Because you've instantly lost Kay if that's the case.
Yeah, but she's she's more open minded. You think it's not like we're asking her to watch Foundation? It's different.
Yeah. No, I think anyway, she likes a character driven story, and if it's got character driven, she'll watch it. with a bit of sci-fi in it.
Which The City on the Edge of Forever absolutely is. Okay. It's a complete, absolute classic episode.
Over to James. We could probably go and make a cup of tea, Boyd, and probably have a full meal, because this will be, I would say, probably 52 minutes of James talking about
Star Trek. I resent that implication.
I might go down to have breakfast, in the restaurant and then come back and he'll still...
And then we'll see if James has even got even halfway through the answer.
Bear in mind, the question is how to get into Star Trek. And that's quite a difficult thing to pass, isn't it? Because you need an entry point that works for you.
But I would say, that's why I'm saying the entry point...
is definitely not Enterprise.
Hold on. The entry point should be the year that you might have started watching it. So for me, I would say kind of Deep Space Nine is where I really loved it because I was, 16 at that age. So I would say whatever age you were kind of... 14, 15, 16, correspond to when that TV show was on and then start there.
See, I think that, for example, will always be your Star Trek because that was your introduction to it. I think if he's coming to it now, he won't have an emotional connection to any particular era of Star Trek because he's only watched Picard, right? So he needs something that on the one hand is a good introduction to Trek, on the other hand is of high enough quality that it doesn't make him think Trek is shit. But also, the other thing to bear in mind is something like, especially Next Generation and obviously the original series, they are very dated looking. So I don't know how he feels about that. Would it put him off? We could sit him down with some original serious stuff like City on the Edge of Forever, as Boydie said, or Space Seed, Devil in the Dark, Balance of Terror, one of those. And he might be like, this looks like shit. This is all very, papier-mâché and wooden, and it is. It's old school 60s sci-fi. So that might alien. And also, let's be honest, original series, sorry, Boydie, not very good. So let's...
God, this is worse than the Zachary Quinto abomination.
I stand by Zachary Quinto.
Obviously you do, because it's your theory. It's obviously wrong.
I stand
but
by it.
Equally, James's theory that the OG Star Trek is rubbish is so offensive.
I mean, that is offensive. It isn't rubbish.
Yeah.
It isn't.
It's like saying the universe is rubbish because Adam and Eve are dated or something.
That's quite the analogy, Boydie.
Yeah.
But
also,
you're making claims against the quality of it, and I actually think some of the charm of early Trek is
that it's quite janky. Of course, that is part of it. Yeah, yeah.
It's made in the 60s.
Boyd is literally combusting. He's so angry.
I think our listener who asked this question is more intelligent enough to deal with the dated, obviously budgetary issues, etc., of a program made in the 60s, and will be drawn to the brilliant storytelling and characterization of the show, and realize that it started the whole thing off obviously in fantastic style, and that's why we've ended up now with Star Trek being an indelible franchise of films and TV, etc., that it is today, all down to the brilliance of the OG series.
Yeah.
Thank you. That's welcome to my TED talk.
I see what's happening. But if I'm gonna recommend that he get into Star Trek and wants to use the original series as the gateway, I'd go straight to the films. I would.
I'd go straight to the films.
Yeah.
I knew you said that.
But crucially, you skip the first one, obviously, because it's dreadful, and you'd go straight to Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan.
Okay.
And that would be your introduction to Star Trek.
Well, that's universally thought of as the best, though, isn't it? Wouldn't you say?
Yeah, I actually agree with James on that point, I would say. I love The Undiscovered Country.
So do I. It's brilliant.
Shocking.
There are different ways of doing this because, he said he's quite sci-fi inclined, so I think go straight in with The Wrath of Khan, do it. If he was saying, I'm not really into sci-fi, I'd have said go straight for 4, The Voyage Home, because that was the crossover one that even if you weren't into sci-fi, because it takes place on 20th century Earth, you can get into that. So, and it also has got whales in it. Who doesn't love whales? But you'd watch the second one, Wrath of Khan. Now, Search for Spock, underrated, is actually not that bad. Now, the rule of Star Trek, if you don't know the Star Trek films, is that the even numbers are good and the odd numbers are bad. So that is something you have to bear in mind. Search for Spock, obviously an odd number, but it's actually one of the better odd numbers. So I would go Wrath of Khan, Search for Spock, Voyage Home if you fancy it, it's a bit funny. Absolutely under no circumstances watch 5. Absolutely not. That's the Final Frontier is a disaster. But then watch 6, as Boydie says. 6, The Undiscovered Country, is brilliant. Really, really good one. And then I would stop because I wouldn't watch any of the next-gen films because while First Contact is good, they're not great. And I feel like you'll love them if you love The Next Generation, but if you've not watched them yet, don't do those. You could, as Steph suggested, go for something more contemporary. Go with J.J. Abrams' 2009 Star Trek. Then you've got to watch Into Darkness, which is okay. It's not as bad as people think. And then Star Trek Beyond is pretty good. So you could watch those 3 films. But if you want to start small screen, it's Next Generation, right?
I think it's what's interesting for Bahar is why Picard? I find that so strange.
Yeah, I imagine because it was on and it's recent. But then again, if you're going to do that, you'd go Discovery, but with caveats. So you'd watch Discovery Season 1, which is brilliant. You might watch Season 2, which is good because that's got all the Pike Enterprise stuff. And then you could pivot straight from that to Strange New Worlds. So that would be quite a fun thing to do. So you could go down that route, though I'm not sure that's the best way to do it. I would go the films. That is my entry point for you.
Okay.
I would say watch those films up to Undiscovered Country. Then I would pivot straight to TV, go straight to Next Generation, skip the whole of Season 1 because it's dreadful. The first one, Encounter at Farpoint, you're going to need to watch at some point because it introduces a major character, John Delancey's Q. But it's a really boring two-parter. What you really want to do is start with Season 3, but there's a good episode in Season 2 called The Measure of a Man, which I would recommend. But I would go straight to Season 3. Also in Season 2, maybe Q Who, because that introduces the Borg, and you need that as well. Season 3, Deja Q, Yesterday's Enterprise, and then The Best of Both Worlds, Parts 1 and 2. And then those are all great episodes, and then just... I would cherry pick the good episodes going forward. Although, to be honest, everything for Season 3 is watchable. But things like Darmok, Iborg, the game with Ashley Judd, you know, the one with the little video game, right?
Yes.
That's a really fun one. Ensign Row, which is brilliant, introduces Michelle Forbes. She's fabulous. Schisms is great. Chain of Command is amazing. Genuinely amazing television when it's one of the best episodes of Next Gen ever made, if not the best. It's the one where Captain Picard gets abducted by the Cardassians. That's Cardassians, not Kardashians. That would be a very different type of show. I made Terry watch that. She thought it was wonderful, I think. Tapestry is really good. There's also an episode called Lower Decks, which is good, but not to be confused with the adult animation Lower Decks, which I get a lot of shit for because I don't like it, and a lot of people do. If you're really into adult animation, maybe watch that. But I feel like unless you already know Star Trek, a lot of its charms will be lost on you. So I'd probably give that a wide berth. And then once you've delved into that, I would go to DS9 because DS9 is wonderful. Again, terrible first season. Maybe watch Duet. That's pretty good.
Why is it a terrible first season?
Okay, so with the exception of Discovery and Strange New Worlds, like not including Modern Trek, but Classic Trek has always started badly. Voyager, Deep Space Nine, Next Generation, Enterprise, they have all been dreadful out of the gate and they take a while to find their feet. So you've always got, like, so starting at the beginning, which I would normally recommend, is actually not to be recommended. But Deep Space Nine episodes, The Search Parts 1 and 2, which was the Season 3 opener, that's when it all really starts to ramp up. Really, really good stuff. What else? Past Tense, Heart of Stone are really good. The Way of the Warrior in Season 4, which is the turning point for Deep Space Nine, because two things happen. Michael Dorn crosses over from Next Generation as Worf, and Avery Brooks as Sisko shaves his head and grows his beard. And that is the turning point for that show. Once he shaves his head, it fucking kicks up a notch.
I don't think I've ever seen you look this happy.
I
genuinely don't think I have.
You know, you see, you talk about Foundation, and what was the one you absolutely banged on about for ages?
What, The Expanse?
The Expanse, yeah. It's all the same.
Yeah.
Make sure you watch Subspace Rhapsody, which is the musical episode of Strange New Worlds. That's loads of fun. But yes, right, to recap, to answer your actual question, the films, 2, 3, 4, and 6. That's where you start.
Right.
Then you pivot to Next Generation, and you start working your way through Next Generation, beginning with the Season 2 episode, The Measure of Man. I'd maybe start there. And then the episodes that I mentioned. So, you know, Q Who, Yesterday's Enterprise, Best of Both Worlds, Darmok, Iborg, The Game, etc., etc.
I just or go, else go straight you could watch... into Deep Space Nine, and it's lovely. Oh, you'll have a great time.
Or else you can watch the original series, City on the Edge of Forever, and you'll have a great time. Thanks, bye.
Deep Space Nine is the best, I should be said, but I think you need to build up to that.
All right.
I think you need to build up to it. I don't know if any of this has been helpful, or even, if I'm honest, coherent. There we go. That was a question answered.
The answer to that.
If you would like your question answered in that kind of minute forensic detail, do send them in pilottv@empiremagazine.com via the miracle of email.
You could have done a whole podcast on that.
I could.
And you almost
did. I nearly
don't
did.
Don't encourage him. Don't suggest such things.
Do you know what? So I was prepared to talk about that in greater length and at less speed, but the various blank expressions I was getting from the two of you, I felt like I had to
gabble. It's because I can't remember specific episodes because I haven't... do you know what? I'm going to do a rewatch. I'm going to Deep Space Nine rewatch.
Do a complete DS9 rewatch.
I'm going
to
do it.
Oh God.
So okay, let's dig into this episode briefly since we're talking about this stuff. I actually didn't know that you were a Trekkie. This is news to me. This is very exciting.
Well, I have an older brother.
Right.
So, and he's 3 years older than me. So, sort of by proxy, anything that he was watching, I had to watch, which is why I love Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, right? And all of those. And really and truly, why I love kind of MCU, why I love all superheroes, anything, like all of that stuff is because I had an older brother. But now I love it for myself, like I was saying earlier. Like now I've got to that great age with my child, which is really and truly the only reason to have a child, so you can relive all your watching experiences younger. So we've just shown her Spider-Man and she's like, is this the same as Spidey and His Amazing Friends, which is the cartoon? I'm like, no, now you need to watch real Spider-Man, you know, and she loves Iron Man and all that kind of stuff. But so, yeah, all that, I love all that. Star Trek's amazing. Like, Star Trek's such a, it's like, this is the thing about, like, you say about Kay, like, I think Kay would really enjoy Deep Space Nine. I think she'd get into it and she would like it. I think she would.
I know she wouldn't.
I'm going to ask her.
Boy, do you back me up here.
Well, now?
Because there's emotion, there's romance, there's, you know, there's a lot of
depth. It's in space. I know this because I literally made her watch an episode of Deep Space Nine and she was having none of it.
I'm going to talk to her. I think I can talk to her in a way.
It was Kay. I did get Kay to watch Deep Space Nine, wasn't it? Yes, we watched, that's what. I got Terry to watch Next Generation, but Kay I made watch an episode of Deep Space Nine.
I think that's something incredibly comforting about being in Star Trek world.
I agree.
Don't you?
Okay. I'm sure we asked someone to watch The City on the Edge of Forever, so, but I can't remember.
I don't think we did, because I'm absolutely convinced we haven't done it for this podcast. But Star Trek was always my happy place. When I was quite anxious as a teenager, I've mentioned this in the podcast before, it's not my finest hour, I had the Star Trek Enterprise NCC-1701D technical manual, and that was a comfort read for me. If I was feeling like really stressed out, I would read the technical manual to the Enterprise.
I had that as well.
Did you?
I had that.
You had a mauve cover. Do you remember?
Yeah.
It was great.
It was brilliant, yeah. It was like, what detail they created for this fucking fictional world. It's absolutely brilliant.
Yeah, but it's wonderful, isn't it? Because it's a level of escapism that you can't really can't achieve nowadays. And
you can, because obviously these shows do exist, but something about Trek which is different.
There is something about Trek that's different, but what I mean when I say that is I think the escapism that you can achieve when you're watching sci-fi as a child is different, because your brain is working differently, so you're so immersed in it. So all of my wonderful, like, joyful feelings about watching Star Trek as a child, I find I don't think I can replicate that as an adult. Because do you understand what I mean?
I do.
Because you can really immerse yourself.
Star Trek was a solace for me as a teenager in a way that nothing else was. Next Gen in particular was kind of my era of Star Trek. And I remember when I first saw the pilot for that, I actually rented it out of the local, it wouldn't have been Blockbuster Video, probably would have been a Ritz at the time. And they had Encounter at Farpoint Parts 1 and Parts 2. And I was like, what the hell is Star Trek The Next Generation? Because obviously I'd watched original Trek as a boy. I was like, okay, and I rented that out and that began my obsession. And then during university, it was all about Deep Space Nine. And again, the video store would have like double episodes, right? So you'd rent out and it would have two episodes on it. And I would rent those all the time as they dropped to university as I was watching Deep Space Nine. I loved all of that stuff, Voyager. And I think because I did suffer from anxiety quite a lot as a teenager, I would be able to just disappear into that
show. That's what I'm saying.
And I don't know whether it was like hours of Jeffrey's Tubes or Data walking down a corridor. I don't know what it is about it. But even now when I watch it kind of, it makes me feel a bit warm and fuzzy.
I agree. And I think the other thing is, I think that Star Trek is an accessible sci-fi because the lot of the situation on board the Enterprise is actually quite domestic. Do you know what I mean? So you actually kind of, you don't feel, it's not like your beloved Foundation, which I have watched.
It's quite dense.
Yeah. But it does feel accessible. It feels like an accessible world. It feels like you kind of know these people and you can get to know these characters. And yes, okay, it sounds ridiculous. Yes, they're in space, but they don't feel that far removed. Does that make sense?
It's also not that ridiculous anymore.
No, it isn't ridiculous.
Just to go back to the original series, it's an incredible, it has so much incredible insights into the kind of technology we now take for granted. I mean, you know, mobile phones, flip phones, they invented pretty much.
Off the back of Star Trek, yes.
Star Trek. And I also, touching on the whole thing, you know, that why you got into it in the first place, of the comfort, and why, I think it is a lot to do with how old you are, because I'm older than you, and I'm from a previous generation, and we watch.
Whereas we are the next generation.
I grew up watching Star Trek 6 o'clock, you know, BBC Two, I think it was. And, you know, it was like, oh my God, what is this stuff? It was so different to all the British stuff was happening. And it's like when you watch Doctor Who for the first time, your doctor, in my case, like Tom Baker is the one that is my favourite Doctor, because he's the one I grew up watching mostly. And Star Trek, the original, is the Star Trek franchise thing I grew up watching. And I will always love it. And I'll always be aware and realise what an incredible influence it was on the rest of Star Trek history.
But that's what I'm saying. No, if you love Star Trek in general, I do believe your favourite Star Trek will be the Star Trek you grew up with.
Unless it's Enterprise.
Yeah, that's what... Yeah.
No, I'm in defence of Enterprise, but then I love Scott because...
I think Enterprise is the only one I've never rewatched. I've never revisited. Once was enough.
Do you know what? I would say I am a massive Quantum Leap fan. So
who isn't?
Right. So because I love Quantum Leap, maybe that's probably why I lean towards that as well.
Do you know what? I've got to be honest with you. If Sam Beckett had the chance, he would go back and stop them making Star Trek Enterprise.
Okay, you've gone too far.
Put right.
You've
what gone once
too
went
far.
Wrong.
You've gone too far. He's gone too far.
Oh, boy.
Let's
move on from that particular question. I enjoyed that. That was good. Good bit of Star Trek chat. Should we
of course
move
you
on
did.
To.
He's so happy.
I am quite happy. Should we move on to this week's news? And for that, I hand it over to our correspondent in LA, Boyd Hilton, on the cutting edge of TV journalism. He's just come back from the Apple presentation. What have you learned, Boydie?
Well, what a day it was. James, they basically unveiled their slate for the rest of the year, kind of, in terms of TV and film. And they had a series of panels of the stars and creators of these shows that I'm about to mention. It was absolutely incredible. I know, obviously, you have to bear in mind that I am on a junket of the kind of which you have every year when you go on your... Was it Universal Studios?
I'm not sure you can call it a junket if I'm not doing interviews. I think we can just call it a jolly.
I haven't done any interviews either. Anyway, So they did stuff like there's a show called Imperfect Women, which these three main stars are Elizabeth Moss, Kerry Washington and Kate Mara, and it's kind of like a crime thriller drama about they're a tight knit group of best friends, and then there's a murder, and then it all changes all their lives and stuff. But what a trio of stars, right? Elizabeth Moss, Kerry Washington, and Kate Mara. I mean, the stars that were there. I'm just looking at Anya Taylor-Joy is in a show called Lucky, which is from Jonathan Tropper, one of your favorite showrunners, James.
That's right.
Yes, Timothy Oliphant is in that as well. And that's like, she's the daughter. He's set in Vegas and he's like a criminal and, you know, con man. And she's his daughter. And she's kind of like grown up with all his dodgy activities. There is a show called Maximum Pleasure Guaranteed with Tatiana Maslany, who's always brilliant, Jake Johnson, Brandon Flynn. That's a really interesting thing about young guys who kind of sell their services online, if you like. Cam boys, they're called.
Kate, what?
Steph. Yeah, I'm sure you'll be aware of all of those.
I'm not. What is it? So young boys who sell their services online?
Not young boys. Like young men. Young men, basically.
Oh, okay. Sell
services. So intimacy. It's kind of like a grey area between sex work and, you know, kind of emotional
therapy.
People. It's an emotional therapy. It's an interesting world that it's exploring. Put it that way. They did shows that are already on as well. So they did Shrinking, yours and Kay's favourite, right?
Oh, our favourite.
And he was there. Harrison Ford was there.
Oh my God!
Yeah.
What did he say?
In full. He was kind of brilliant. He was kind of like not grumpy, because clearly I've seen Harrison Ford, you know, be grumpy before.
How dare
as
you?
An interviewee, because he loves the show so much. He kind of launched a little, you know, a really touching tribute to how good he thinks the show is and how much he loves his character and all of that. So it was brilliant to see him. He looks incredible. He's like in his mid-80s.
Well, there's a scene in Shrinking where he takes his top off at one point and he still looks incredible.
The very first sequence, pretty much, of the new season. Yeah, yeah. He's ripped. Then we had Pluribus. There was a Pluribus panel. Our friends of the pod, Vince Gilligan, Ray Seahorn, and Carolina Wydra, and Carlos Manuel Visca. And that was moderated by all the moderators were either like in the show or co-created the show or whatever. And Samba Shooter was moderating, who's the guy who's in Vegas, you know, he's the guy celebrating the joys of being part of the hive mind, of not being part of the hive mind in Pluribus, rather, and, you know, living it up. He's that guy. And he was really good fun as a host. There were Colin Farrell did a thing for season two of Sugar, and they basically, and Shea Whigham interviewed him, who's in the new season. Yes.
Boyd, can I just interrupt you about Sugar? Because, you know, I was really, really excited about that. So, yes.
This
is it true that this is coming back on the 19th of June? Can you confirm that?
I think so. Yeah. Yes, I believe so.
And
yes.
Can you confirm this? So this is what I've read, right? So he's tracking the older brother of an up-and-coming local boxer as he continues to search for his beloved missing sister. That's what I've read.
Yeah.
Can you confirm this to be true?
I can confirm,
so excited.
Yeah. They also... What's interesting about Sugar is there's the massive twist in Sugar, right, which anyone who's watched season one will know about. And I was wondering how they're going to deal with this on the panel. Are they just going to kind of, you know, warn people, you know, they've got massive spoiler. But they just basically accepted that everyone knew and they just discussed it.
Okay.
So that was quite interesting.
Well, I would say to listeners who have any interest in watching Sugar, this is definitely a show you need to watch the first season of before you dive into season two.
Yeah, 100%. Your Friends and Neighbours, which you mentioned, James, earlier.
Yes.
John Hamm, Amanda Peet, Olivia Munn, they're all there. James Marsden, who's the newbie for season two. And that's Jonathan Tropper as well. He was a busy man. He hosted the two sessions.
Jonathan Tropper, lest we forget, showrunner of my beloved Banshee. And, of course, seasons two and three of C.
Exactly. There's a really good show called looks brilliant called Widow's Bay.
Spoiler alert, embargo breaking.
Widow's Bay?
I don't know. You just said it was a really good show, and I'm just saying that's
sorry,
a spoiler for this podcast and probably breaking an embargo.
No. Just from the clips they show.
Oh, I see. You haven't actually seen it.
Yeah.
Okay.
And what Matthew Rhys was saying about it and the creators. Katie Dippold is the co-creator of the show, and she was really good fun. It's kind of set in the kind of world of, like, Jaws is set. It's like a tribute to that kind of world, you know, but without having a great white shark in it. And it's like a kind of horror comedy thriller type thing. They're all talking about, like, a mix of genres, but it looks really fun from the clips. I'm not breaking any embargo. That was fully allowed. Well, I think that might have been... Oh, Demonic Legacy of Monsters, if you're into that, you know, all that's coming back soon with Godzilla and King Kong and monsters, and Kurt Russell and White Russell playing the same character, of course, old and young. There's got Margot's Got Money Troubles. How can I forget? Michelle Pfeiffer, Elle Fanning, Nick Offerman, all on stage as well.
This is the show where Elle Fanning goes on OnlyFans, isn't it?
Yes, exactly. Yes. But Michelle Pfeiffer holding forth about that. That looks really good as well. So, yeah, there's loads of amazing stuff, and it was a fine time. Oh, I missed out. Sorry, James. I've left the best till last, because the most exciting thing they showed for me, the clips they showed and the trailer they showed, is the TV version of Cape Fear that they're doing.
Do you know what, Boyd? Yeah. I was literally just going to ask you what your favourite thing is, and I had the Cape Fear on my the remake of Cape Fear, because it's Amy Adams, isn't it?
Amy Adams, Patrick Wilson, who are on the panel, and Javier Bardem as the Robert De Niro villain character, who looks absolutely brilliant. I mean, Javier Bardem has done some of the best bad, nasty villain acting, right, in recent times.
I'm gonna say something that you're probably going to disagree with. I think that Javier Bardem is the greatest Bond villain of all time.
No, I think you might be right. He's absolutely brilliant. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I don't really know what to do with that comment.
What do you mean you don't know what to do with that comment? You don't think that Javier Bardem is...
I mean, he's good. He's definitely good. Is he the best of all time?
I think he's the best of all time.
It's a very good film, but...
Okay, who's better than him?
I mean, Blofeld or Goldfinger? Like, no.
Goldfinger, maybe.
Yeah. No. Javier Bardem takes out
his teeth,
that is one of the greatest Bond scenes ever. Anyway, sorry, Boyd, carry on.
No, I don't disagree. I think he is potentially in that role. Of course, No Country for Old Men. Remember his performance in that? Extraordinary. Yeah. I mean, he is fucking brilliant. And from the clips they showed, he's going to be equally astounding as the horrendous. So they've turned basically Cape Fear, the story, into a 10-part series. And they were talking all about the challenges of that, and, you know, what they're exploring and how it's going to be different from the film. So I'm intrigued to see, because I love Cape Fear, the film. The second version is the Robert Mitchum version before that, which is also good.
But the De Niro one is the iconic.
The De Niro, Scorsese, Nick Nolte, Jessica Lange one is absolutely incredible. I watch it like pretty much. You know what it is? It's one of my favourite films.
Of course it is.
Yeah.
This does fall under that awful umbrella of IP farming a little bit, which is, you know, obviously Paramount Plus have done quite a lot of this as well, but Apple have done it with Presumed Innocent. It gives me pause, because I prefer original things. And also, because the Scorsese one is so good, it feels like, what more can you add to this? Like, it's been done exceptionally well. But, you know, obviously TV is a different format. This will be a long form story. So it'll be, you know, and maybe it will bear that. I don't know. I'm not going to judge it. I am excited about it. I definitely want to see it.
I would be very, very interested to see what they do with the score for this ten-parter, because that the score to Cape Fear is it's such an integral part. Yeah. It's such an integral part of the film. Yes.
Steph, let me just tell you exclusively that they introduced the clips and the onstage presentation with the theme tune.
That's what I need to hear.
Yeah, the answer is they're using the original. It's so good, that theme. It's incredible. Yeah.
So to your point, James, because that would be one thing that I'd say, you cannot improve on that at all. So, you know, you never know.
Yeah, well, Alex Godfrey of Empire Magazine spoke to the showrunner about this stuff. I'm sure you'll read all about it in Empire at some point. But he was very open, the showrunner, about how obviously the challenge of doing exactly that, of turning this incredible original or incredible version of the story into a 10-hour thing. And he kind of hinted at what he's done. So basically he's exploring the backstories of all the characters. And you could see from the clips, there's certain different kind of things. They've all got secrets and lies, you know, within them. All of the main characters, the family and the kind of main villain character played by De Niro in the film. So it's just going deeper into all of that, into the whole, all the characters and their lives and their backstories and their secrets.
Boyd, I don't know if you can tell from LA, but James has already decided he hates it, and
he's got his
skeptical look on. Yeah. Definitely, yeah. He's got we'll see. We'll let James judge when it arrives. He'll tell us, you know, what happens in the end and why.
Tell us. If it's been critically annihilated, he'll be the first to let us know. Okay.
Is there any other news other than Boydie's exploits in Apple Land?
Okay. So Jack Thorne has said about Adolescence that there is not going to be a second series that involves the Miller family. I had read. Did you know that?
I assumed as much, but I hadn't seen the quote.
He said no, is not going to. He said, so if we ever do anything else in that format, which we might do in years to come, but not
good
currently
choice.
Thinking.
Good choice.
The other thing that I saw, and I haven't watched this, I don't know really if you guys ever reviewed this, Animal Kingdom. Have you seen that show?
Yeah.
Finn Cole. Okay, so yes. Finn Cole. So this ran for 6 seasons. I've never watched it, which I find strange. I hadn't even heard of it, to be honest. Crime drama starring Peaky Blinders actor Finn Cole. And it's all 6 seasons have landed on Netflix. So you can binge it all, which I plan to do. Is it any good, guys?
I think it started as a film, didn't it? To my memory, I think. And this is like the TV series version of the film, I'm pretty sure. It's like a matriarch, a mad criminal matriarch and her family of kind of violent thugs.
Joshua J. Cody, a grieving teenager who moves in with his mother's estranged family after she dies from an overdose. It's all on Netflix now, all 6 seasons, and there to binge at your pleasure. In Bill Lawrence news, I read that the janitor is not going to be featuring in the reboot, and they will only address whether the janitor, who also is in Shrinking, they will only address whether the janitor comes back, because they're currently working on episode 8 and 9 of the new series, if they get a second season. So if you care about the janitor, which I love the janitor in Scrubs.
How do you have a reboot of Scrubs without the janitor?
Well, do you know what, James? That's exactly my point. I don't think you can, because he gets all those snappy one-liners, and I don't think you can have it without him. So this is making me, and I love Scrubs, it's making me very, very concerned.
Yeah, that makes me concerned as well.
Okay.
Interesting.
I know.
Interesting. Well, here's what's also interesting. I should do a big dramatic build-up to this, but after last time I'm not going to. But there's been more casting for the God of War TV show, which is very exciting. Specifically one particular bit, and that is that Mandy Patinkin is going to be playing Odin, King of the Gods, a role that was voiced by Richard Schiff from The West Wing in the video game. So that's very cool.
Yay,
that's right. Olafur Darri Olafsson is going to be voicing Thor. He has the best voice ever, but he's gravelly. He's a great Thor. That's a really good choice. So excited about that. And anyone else? I guess the people like Alistair Duncan was cast as Mimir as well, and I think we covered Max Parker's Heimdall. I think we covered the others. So that's my weekly update on the casting of the upcoming God of War show.
Great. We feel fully informed about God of War, don't we, Boyd?
Good.
We
I'm
were
glad.
Waiting for
yeah.
it.
I'm very glad.
We were.
Yes. Has there been any other news? It's not been a particular... Oh, no, there was one bit of news, I'm sure, because I think I put it in a little news folder. Hold on, let me have a look.
Bless you.
Did I? Oh, well, no, this is something that Boyd has obviously already covered, so that's not very helpful, but that Your Friends and Neighbours has been renewed for season 3. But we knew that.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That has been renewed for a third season. That I am actually very pleased about, because as I've said, I really like that show.
Yeah, he talked about how it's good to know you've been renewed, and then you can plan ahead and, you know, get it all. Oh, that at the end of the Pluribus session, because they took audience questions, and someone asked, when are we going to see season 2 of Pluribus? And he's like, well, we're literally right in the middle of writing it now. It's not going to be next year. It's not going to be, you know, and he was like, don't, patience is going to have to be applied to the future of Pluribus, is all I can say. Because it's a big, big challenge writing these episodes. And you're like, yeah, of course it is, because they're brilliant.
You're like, God damn it, Vince, write faster.
Yeah, basically.
Be patient. Vince has asked for patience, and I think that we should give it to him.
Okay. Okay. Well, there may well be other news before we air, but unfortunately we are recording this on a Wednesday, and there has been no other news at this point.
I think it's quite a lot of good news, though.
There we go. Yeah, Boydie carried the news section, I've got to be honest
with you. Well, no, I think we all wanted to know about the God of War stuff.
Yeah, I mean, that's vital.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, should we move on to this week's reviews? And first up, we have the return of Prime Video's Dadcore lineup as Cross comes back for season 2. And this is the show that sees Aldous Hodge as Detective Alex Cross, the star of James Patterson's hugely popular crime novels. Although, as noted in the first season, while this takes place sort of canonically after the first Cross novel, Along Came a Spider, it is an all-new story with all-new cases. It is not based on any of Patterson's novels directly, and that continues with season 2, because showrunner Ben Watkins has kind of updated the character for the modern era, updated the context, and kind of charted his own course with this. So, in this second season, Cross teams up with FBI agent Kayla Craig to find out who's trying to kill Matthew Lillard. As a pair of killers, one of which is played by The Expanse's Amos Burton, Wes Chatham himself, they are targeting sex traffickers and cutting their fingers off, which honestly doesn't sound that unreasonable. Steph, this is Crime. You are the editor of Crim and Her magazine. Did you like this, or did it make you cross?
No, I didn't watch season 1 of Cross.
Call yourself a crime fan.
Yes, I don't know what I was doing. Obviously, I should have been watching it, but I didn't. As we said earlier, they do deliver a bit of a sizzle reel, which helps you in no way at all know what happened in there. So I did read a little bit about what happened, so I kind of know. The first thing I'd like to say about this is I don't think that there is an actor alive that can wear a light knit quite as impeccably as Aldous Hodge, because the number of light knits in this series is astounding, and he is obviously an incredibly handsome man. So whilst I found that quite distracting, I also very much enjoyed the content of this, okay?
I'm wearing quite a light knit today, you'll notice, but not as well as Aldous Hodge.
Oh, sweetie, you're so pretty. Right.
Oh, my God.
Anyway, what I really loved about this, it felt incredibly timely, because basically, I'm not giving away any secrets because you've already said it's sex trafficking. You kind of, this female descends on what can only be described as Epstein Island.
Yeah.
Okay, so it starts off, and this woman is rescuing people from Epstein Island, and there's lots of horrendous men there and young women on there, and it just feels incredibly timely, doesn't it? If you are in any way versed in Epstein, I mean, you can't really get away from Epstein and everything that's been going on with that. So it dives in, and there's some pretty gruesome removing of things that happens in that first scene. Again, I don't want to give it away.
I mean, I've already done it, but it's fine.
You just said it.
Yeah. What did you say?
I've said they're cutting people's fingers off, so it's fine.
Okay,
they chop off his fingers.
When they cut off that guy's fingers, it's really like, isn't it? It's a really, yeah, anyway. I really liked it. I love Aldous Hodge is obviously amazing as Cross. He's, you know, he's wonderful. He's beautiful to look at. He's incredibly convincing. I love his relationship with his partner, John Sampson, played by Isaiah Mustafa. And yeah, I think one of the problems I've got is because I'm not familiar with the intense jeopardy from season 1. So Kayla Craig's character is obviously working for the FBI, and she's partnered with Alex Cross, and she's got a secret, and I can only assume that you know what that is if you've watched it.
Not a clue. And I don't even think this is due to the fact that I have almost no recollection of anything that happened in season one. I don't think this is stuff that we're privy to.
Okay. And obviously there's a relationship that Alex Cross has with someone. And
that may have happened in season one, but I don't remember.
That's really interesting, because I was like, oh, it's a shame because I don't know the backstory of all of these things, of all of these
I know they know each other because she's in season one, but I can't remember really anything.
Okay. My overall feeling of this is, it's good. It's not great. I wouldn't say it's great. Am I going to continue watching it? Probably not. But it's enjoyable. It's just kind of fine, I think, to use one of James's.
Yeah.
It's just fine. It's not groundbreaking in any way.
Boy, do you like a bit of dadcore?
Yeah, I'm exactly the same as you. I watched the first season. I just didn't remember it at all. And the recap absolutely did not help.
You're just like, nothing.
Exactly. The recap kind of summed up what I do like about the show, which is that it's got its own quite weird vibe to it. It's got kind of like, it's quite out there in terms of its tone, and it's very, quite heightened, and it's very slick and like kind of vividly drawn. It's fun to watch as it's going on. And he is great, as you say. He's, you know, Aldous Hodge. He's really good. He's like he's hot in his jumper, in his what did you call it?
It's a light knit.
It's like a thin.
Yeah. It's a thin jumper. It's a light knit.
Right. That's what
I thought. You're wearing a light knit.
Yeah.
Now.
Well, I wanted to be clear in case this was sort of fashion lingo I wasn't familiar with, and it just meant that it was light coloured or something. I don't know.
Oh no, I'm not one with the fashion lingo. Right. No, it's just like a thin jumper.
Yeah, let me just say, no need for any kind of jumper today in LA, because it's record breaking. It's nearly 90 degrees today.
Jesus Christ.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
Anyway.
Thank you, boys.
You horror.
Thank you. There's also, as you say, like it does feel very topical with its dealing with billionaires and their desires and what they do to exploit those desires. There's an interesting character played by Matthew Lillard of Scream fame, Matthew Lillard, wasn't he one of the people that Quentin Tarantino dissed in his epic famous thing when he chose his favorite films, top 20 films of the millennium or whatever, and he slagged off some various actors, including Paul Dano. But in the kind of everyone was felt sorry for Paul Dano, and they all supported him and issued statements saying how horrible Quentin Tarantino was to him. But in the fallout from that, at the same time, he did manage to slag off Matthew Lillard, which was so random, you know. So why?
I know, but he was really scathing towards Paul Dano. I think it was horrible. And Paul himself said, there was that quote that he said, like, I didn't feel like I needed to respond because I felt like the world stuck up for me. And I was like, yes Paul, good for
you. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Anyway, I stick up for Matthew Lillard, who's good in this, and it's an interesting character. And I like the whole, I think, yeah, it's got like a slightly, not pushing it too fine a point, slightly twisted edge to it, with the cutting off of the fingers and, you know, and the kind of crimes that it explores. It's quite, you know, it's a little bit over the top is what I think about it. And I like that. I like that it's trying to do something, you know, a bit different with, let's face it, source material that we've seen before in various films, and if you read the books, etc. It's got a little bit of ambition to be different, and that's what I appreciate most about it. But I guarantee that if I carry on watching it, and then in a year's time there's season three, I will have forgotten all of this season as well. But, you know, it's one of the things, you enjoy it while it's on.
Yeah, you enjoy it while it's on. It's a bit like, you know how the soundtrack is very kind of jazzy? It's just fine. It's fine. It's just like, it feels like after dinner viewing. It's just fine. It's not, I don't think, it's not groundbreaking. I don't think it is that ambitious, actually, Boyd. What did you find ambitious about it?
It's more ambitious is maybe the wrong word. I don't know. It's like, it's slightly more twisted and, you know, than you might think it would be. I don't know. I'm labouring the point, giving it too much credit. But while it's on, it could be. It's not like one of those flat, you know, network style procedurals. Put it that way.
That's a
where
good point.
You know, it's not badly formulaic. Or you remember we've seen, you know, Butterfly famously, the Butterfly incident at our live show with Russell T. Davis intervened, and I had to explain what the hell that fucking show was. That's such a generic, boring thing. This, although it seems like it might be a generic, boring thing, actually, while you're watching it, there's more to it than that. That's what I'm trying to say.
James.
Yeah, I mean, I, like I say, I watched a lot of season one. The A plot line in which involved this serial killer, the fanboy, which was very dark and very twisted. I do remember some of that. There's a B plot, which involves Cross's dead wife and someone who may or may not have been involved in that. And even though that is in the previously on, I was like, I don't know what's happening and I can't remember how this series ended. So I was a little lost on that. But I was quite, because I did watch the whole of the first season, I must have enjoyed it because I watched it. So I was like, okay, I'm quite looking forward to this. I watched the first episode of the second season and was a bit like, huh.
Mm.
I was like, I felt like something was missing. Like, so I watched the second one to try and, you know, okay, well, maybe, okay, yeah. Got to the end of the second one, I was like, huh. Same feeling. And I actually feel like this has maybe taken a dip from season one. And the reason I say that is because the kind of B plot on this one seems to revolve heavily around the FBI agent who I'm uncharitably calling Budget Linda Cardellini. But only because I genuinely thought, I was like, Linda Cardellini is looking fantastic for her age. And then, of course, I realized it's a completely different actor. But anyway, just so... There's a kind of conspiracy type subplot involving her character, which just seems so over the top and forced at this stage, at the beginning, that I was just like, I'm just not sure I'm buying it. I'm not sure I'm buying this particular subplot. And given that the main plot, don't get me wrong, Wes Chatham is amazing and I'd watch him in anything, and that instantly had my attention because he's in the first scene. But I just thought, I don't...
From The Expanse.
From The Expanse, that's right, yeah. But I just couldn't bring myself to be interested enough. And so I genuinely feel like, much as I enjoy a bit of Dadcore, and much as I enjoyed, apparently, the first season of this, I don't think I'm going to watch the second season.
I think it speaks volumes that neither of you can remember what happened in the first season. And the whole point of getting a second season is because the first season is so compelling that you're so attached to what's the storyline of those characters that you really need it to move on and you want to know what's happened to them. And you two, frankly, couldn't give a shit.
That's true.
So,
do you know what stuck out for me, though?
What?
There's a random bit at the beginning of this first episode where after, you know, the prologue where a crime has been committed, they launch into the Bad Sisters theme tune. Did you notice this?
It's
the PJ Harvey cover of Who By Fire, Leonard Cohen's Who By Fire. I think it's the PJ Harvey version, which was recorded, if I recall correctly, specifically for Bad Sisters. And it plays at the beginning. And I was like, what the fuck is that? Is someone watching Bad Sisters? But no, it's just playing. Maybe it's a different cover, I don't know. But that really threw me.
I feel a bit like, if you don't find out what happens to Cross, are you going to care?
No.
Yeah.
No, probably not.
You're not going to care, are you? And I want to care, but I don't.
Yeah.
He is just a pretty face in this show, unfortunately, and a pretty body.
Yeah. So watch it or don't watch it, or binge season one and two back to back for a double cross. You know, if you don't want to do that, that's absolutely fine. Because it comes to Prime Video when, Boydie?
Wednesday, the 11th of February, 2026.
Okay. Moving on, we have Betrayal on ITV, which sees Sean Evans as John Hughes, a maverick MI5 officer who starts the show, frankly, getting brains splattered all over him. And his day generally goes downhill from there. So, Boydie, does this security services thriller have brains, or are the only ones on display on Sean Evans' face?
I am in the pocket of Big Betrayal because I did host...
Am I going to have to pivot to Steph? Am I going to pivot to Steph?
You might have to pivot to Steph, sorry.
Right, you're pivot up. To me. Okay, I'm going to make a claim about this show and you and ITV, okay?
Me and ITV, or you and ITV, like you and drama?
James and ITV. Okay, so I think I enjoyed this show.
Yeah.
I think if this show was on Netflix, you would enjoy this show. I really do.
It would have a bigger budget.
But I think because it's on ITV, he's gonna be disparaging about it, right? But when I started watching this, I was thinking about you and I was thinking, he's going to be really horrible about this. But actually, this is a great show. And if it was through the Netflix lens, you would enjoy it. Okay. So Sean Evans plays this MI5 agent who is having marriage troubles but he loves his job and he's had this terrible thing happen at work but he's not allowed to tell his wife anything about what happened. So that's causing even more troubles. And you find out that he's had a checkered past. But his job, he's so married to his job that he wants to find out why this person whose brains were splattered all over his face in the first scene, not a spoiler, why that happened. And then he gets paired up well, actually, it's a handover, isn't it? There's a handover. He needs to hand over his case because they want him to take a bit of gardening leave and with a very attractive other agent. And then it all kind of kicks off from there. I really enjoy Sean Evans. I thought he's great in this role. It's exciting. It's kind of very enticing because you really want to know. I'm going to pick something out, which really, I didn't understand why they had it. In one of the first scenes, he goes into a toilet with some, and I'm really hoping it's just not insane product placement. He goes into the toilet with some Anusol.
Yes, he does.
Hemorrhoid cream,
yes,
right? And I was like, what the hell? And there's literally a shot of him holding the Anusol so you can see it. And then later on, he has a conversation with his wife and she's like, you really need to make an appointment to make sure it's not just piles. And then it's not addressed again. And I was like, what the? It just seems so odd.
Okay. I can exclusively reveal, having hosted the Q&A with the writer, David Eldridge, and the cast, that, piles is one of the, is a little subplot, if you like. And I could say with full confidence, because I asked him, I probed him about the use, the storyline.
Nice.
The piles, the piles storyline. And he was like, it is mentioned, it's going to be mentioned throughout the series. And there was thought of it being, just because she's a GP, his wife, Romola Gary's character. And so they want giving him an illness where she's annoyed with him for not checking out. And men don't, this is the thing about men, isn't it? Of his age, our age, my age, even older, of putting off dealing with medical issues you have. So that's kind of what it's about. It's about his age and his issues. But I have to say, there's never been as many mentions of piles, not only in a show, a drama, but also in a Q&A that I've hosted in history. But it was fully discussed.
I mean, so I have to question a little bit whether B plot is about piles. I have to question a show, but I still really enjoyed it. I enjoyed it. I loved the two female leads in it. I thought it was interesting enough to want me to keep watching it. But crucially, I think if it was on Netflix, I hate to say this, I think I would have liked it more. I think it was packaged.
But I mean, you say, we've talked about this quite a lot, it would have a different sheen to it.
Yes.
Because Netflix stuff does have a feel to it in the same way that Apple shows have a feel to it. It would feel more expensive. Weirdly, for me, the only time in this entire show I bumped on the budget, weirdly, was the brain incident. I was unconvinced by the grey matter.
Okay.
I've unconvincing brains. That's my main criticism of it. I was like, I'm not buying that. I'm not buying the fake brains. Sorry.
Okay.
But other than that, I quite enjoyed it. Like, it was decent. I quite like a sort of, security services drama. He's a shit security services officer, it has to be said. And he's kind of on disciplinary measures, not crucially for being a maverick, but for just being a bit bad, which I thought was quite fun. The only thing that I bump on, which I often do, is when people just do things that don't ring true, that no one would ever do, or I don't think they would ever do, or I would certainly never do. Like, so for example, he is having issues with his wife who doesn't trust him. That is not helped by the fact that he has signed the Official Secrets Act and literally cannot tell her anything and has form in being, a problematic husband. But then little things like he gets stuck up north for the night and has to spend the night in a room with someone else. No problems there. But doesn't call her to tell her he's not coming back. It's like, mate, you were in marriage counselling yesterday. Do you not think you owe her a phone call or a text or a voicemail? Something. I don't believe for one second it wouldn't have crossed his mind.
Okay, but, especially not because he looks at his phone before he goes to sleep and sees that she's really pissed off with him. But I think he obviously has, I think one of the themes is...
Do you think it's the hemorrhoids? Is that the reason?
No, I think he has
He's preoccupied.
He has a problem with what he perceives as being controlled in some way. Like, he doesn't want to go to the marriage counselling. He doesn't want to be controlled by his bosses. He does have a little bit of an issue with controlling women. You can see with he has a really tense conversation with one of his bosses where he's left her quite a vicious voicemail and she says, you just can't do that. So I think he would do that. His character would do that. That's very believable because, frankly, he's a little bit of an arsehole.
He is. He is a bit of a bellend.
Yeah. Mm. That's the point. Yeah, I think that, him... We talked about him sharing the hotel room and not telling his wife. It's all part of the character. That is, like, he's kind of self-absorbed.
Yeah, he does not answerable to anyone. That's what he thinks.
I think what's interesting is you saying obviously he can't sign the Official Secrets Act. He can't tell her about the details of his job. But it's like the show's all about what is it like? What is the reality of that like? You know, it's all very well saying it in theory, and her obviously acknowledging the fact, of course, she's not expecting him to tell her the details of the various villains he's dealing with, or why there was blood splattered on his face, or what, you know. But she's not stupid. But at the same time, the day-to-day grind of being married to someone with that job is really clever. I think it's a really clever, interesting idea. And more than that, I think the fact that this hasn't got the slick Netflix sheen to it or Apple sheen to it, it's kind of appropriate in this story, because I think it's looking at the gritty underside, if you like, of a job being a spy, effectively. It's not all glamour and James Bond. It's like the anti James Bond, this series. It's like he's just a normal bit of a bell end, self absorbed, but clearly he kind of loves his job in a way, and yet gets really annoyed when people don't believe what he's telling them, his bosses, and he butts up against his bosses and all of that. I think the main thing about it is it feels really authentic and in fact the guy called Gordon Carrero, who does the rest of his Classified podcast, who's an expert on this stuff, espionage, the realities of it, the day-to-day realities of it, he was a big consultant on the show, and I think it really, really works that it's not trying to be flashy and, you know, but I think the visual style of it absolutely matches the content and what it's trying to do, which is be more gritty and real about all of this whole world. And I think it works very well on that basis. I think Ron Le Gary and him, Sean Evans, are really good, you totally believe they're in this absolutely kind of, not hellish is too strong.
No, it's sort of a dormant,
deeply
marriage.
Flawed.
Yeah,
deeply flawed marriage, particularly for her point of view. She's fucking furious with him. And, you know, you would be, even though you know that he can't. I think as the hint that he's kind of using his job and using the fact that he has to be secretive to be annoying with her in their actual day-to-day relationship. And that's what's kind of gives it that edge, I think.
Well, because there are parts where we know as the audience, he absolutely could tell her, because the thing that has happened is either off book, therefore not technically part of his job, or something that, like, he could absolutely give her some information, and yet he's hiding behind the fact that it's so secret, I can't tell you, just to be a twat.
He doesn't want to tell her anything, and he's an arsehole.
Right. Raging Bellend. I quite enjoyed it, though. I thought it was pretty good.
Yeah. I'm pleased. Yeah. But would you have enjoyed it more if it had the Netflix sheen? I think you would, because I would. And I hate to say it.
Do you know what? I know what Boyd means. I do think that, like, the lo-fi-ness is part of the deliberate aesthetic here, and I actually think it works. Like, this isn't The Night Agent, you know what I mean? I don't think it wants to be. Like, it wants to show you almost the crushing mundanity of working for the security services. And actually, I think that's a really, like, it's not trying to be spooks. Like, it's a very different thing. And I actually think that works. But like, if you look at something like, and I should say there are episodes of this available on the screen site. You remember Criminal Record with Cush Jumbo and Peter Capaldi, you know, that has that kind of slightly sort of like grubby British inner city councillor statey typey crime drama, but still has the Apple sheen to it. So it shows you can have both. You can have lo-fi gritty, but also with all the money in the world. So
yeah, it's like when they get on the train to go to Stockport, you're like, oh, that looks shit. Do you know? You're like, you're just gonna go meet someone in a car park in Stockport, and you're like, this isn't fun.
It legitimately does feel like a Stockport car park.
Yeah, it does.
So yeah, fair enough.
Criminal Record season 2 coming soon, by the way.
It is indeed. Yes, and you can watch the first 6 episodes because they're up there. Just saying.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
I don't have that special access.
Well, it's because you're not special.
I know. Who can I call?
Ghostbusters. Mm. Right.
I'll try and put a word in for you.
Thank you.
Betrayal. ITV Wembley. It's on now, isn't it?
Yeah, it started yesterday, Sunday the 8th, and then continues today, Monday the 9th, if you're listening to this on the day it comes out, which, why wouldn't you? As a pilot subscriber.
Be sure to tune in.
Sundays and Mondays for the next 2 weeks.
Yeah. Be sure to tune in to find out how the hemorrhoid subplot resolved.
Exactly.
Finally this week, we have Small Profits on BBC Two, written, created, directed, and co-starring one Mackenzie Crook, which sees Piers Quigley as a slightly weird guy who works in a DIY store whose girlfriend disappeared some years ago. Naturally, he deals with this in a normal, well-adjusted way by turning to alchemy and the forbidden art of homunculus animation. Because, of course, he does. Now, Boydie, what in the name of Great Odin's Raven is going on in this show?
Yeah, good question. I'm intrigued. By the way, Steph, I remember you said when in the build-up to this week's episode of the Pilot TV podcast, you'd watched an entire series of something because you liked it so much. Was that this?
It's this.
Or
No, oh, six. I've watched all six episodes.
Can I ask a question?
Yes.
Did you watch The Detectorists?
No.
Because like that's you know a glimpse into the mind of Mackenzie Crook. I wondered if the Crookiverse was very much your wavelength.
No, it isn't.
Yeah, well, that's the point to start with. Yeah, so this is Mackenzie Crook, creator of The Detectorists, which was, let's face it, a kind of gentle, charming, subtle, slightly melancholy of tone, kind of comedy-ish series.
Yeah, I think I didn't watch The Detectorists because I was deep in child rearing, and that's the reason I missed it, because it was when Grace was really small. That's why. That's the only reason I say that.
Right. A lot of people absolutely love The Detectorists. Because of its tonal kind of quality, and it's not trying to be, I mean, talk about not being flashy. I mean, this is like, you know, you I think this you wouldn't even get this on Netflix or Apple TV or whatever. It's so kind of quirky. And Mackenzie Crook's definitely got a unique kind of tone to his stuff, to that and this show. And I think in this show, he almost takes it further because of the fact that it does end up dealing with homunculi, magical spirit beings that can predict the future, apparently. Anyway, as James said, Piers Quigley is this guy who's clearly in mourning for the fact that his partner disappeared years ago. Anyway, he seems to be, you know, kind of like still in mourning for the disappearance of his wife years previously. And he seems to be keeping a room Christmassy with a Christmassy vibe as if to kind of honour her memory or something like that. Anyway, and this definitely follows in the tonal footsteps of Detectorists, but I think is even possibly even more kind of, you know, melancholy, charming, weird, with an incredible cast. So on top of Piers Quigley as the main guy, you've also got the fact that his dad is played by Michael Palin, you know, absolute living legend of a comedy genius and fantastic actor, and his memory is faltering. And he's the one who brings out the idea of these homunculi things and has a recipe involving gallons of water, etc. That's happening there. That's bizarre. And then there's Sophie Willen from Animals Not Normal is there as the neighbor with John Poynting from Big Boys as well. Paul Kay is in it. Paul Kay from Afterlife is in it as a key character. I found it very, I kind of enjoyed it. I found it, I do love Mackenzie Crook. And I wasn't a massive fan of Detectives, not as big a fan as some, a lot of TV critics were. It went down very well. I think it won, was certainly nominated for BAFTAs, if not winning them. I like the fact that it is bizarre and weird and doing something completely strange. What's
taking pictures,
James,
sorry.
James is just taking photos of, I don't know, of us. I enjoyed it, but I didn't feel the need. So I'm intrigued. I didn't feel the immediate need to carry on watching the rest of the series. But you did, Steph, and I'm intrigued to know why. So I did enjoy it. I did like it. And I may well carry on watching it when I find the time. But it's so kind of
deeply weird.
And weird. Yeah. But I kind of like that about it. I get it.
Okay. So As we've just said, I ended up watching all six episodes of this, and I watched the first episode, and I was like, mostly because I was like, I need to know whether he's going to make these bloody homunculi, right? I need to know what happens. And from the second episode, I was so drawn in, I went on and watched all six. So for me, this has got several strands to it which are really compelling. His girlfriend, Clea, has been missing for 7 years, okay? He is still in the house that they lived together. And as you said, Boyd, there is a room in the house that he keeps, which has got Christmas stuff on it. And it's revealed why he keeps his house. And it's the house is full of boxes and it's revealed why. So there's slow reveals of why he's got this seemingly odd existence. He also works in a DIY shop where he shows little to no respect for his boss, played by Mackenzie Crook, who's seemingly his only function as a boss is to ask people, which I just found this so hilarious, to ask people if they'd taken their breaks. And if, like me, you frequent like hardware shops, you know, Dunelm, B&M, all of those Aldi.
You frequent hardware shops?
Like, yeah, because I like to have a little mooch around. All you hear all the time...
This is all coming clear now. Yeah.
Well, all you hear all the time is someone going, have you been on your break? Are you going on your break? And so I found just that, the fact that that's the running joke throughout the whole thing, really funny. And he gets this alliance with another shop worker played by Lauren Patel, who plays Casey. And this friendship grows between him and Casey, which is beautiful. It's really beautiful. And they both, obviously, she has some issues. Obviously, he's got his own issues. And I think this is it's rare you find something that is so truly original that it really captivates your attention. And for me, that's what this is. The way that Mackenzie Crook has chosen through humour to deal with this intense grief that this person's feeling, because they have no understanding of what's happened to Clear. To his very core, you can feel the pain. And he's really sarcastic and he sort of disparaging of everyone around him. It drew me in so much and I fell completely in love with him. And he has these beautiful relationships with these people around him that are subtle relationships, but they're powerful. And it was such an original concept. I can't even begin to think where Mackenzie Crook got this. And then there is, again, I'm not going to spoil it, there is a kind of otherworldly quality to him, to this whole thing with the homunculi, which are, you know, what are small prophets, these little people that you grow in jars that will give you the answers to the questions you seek. I really enjoyed that because it's so bizarre. I've not seen anything like this in kind of a British comedy format. And I thought it was absolutely wonderful. And let me just say, if you go get to the end of the 6 episodes, you'll be so pleased. You feel completely full. The comedy in it is very British, I would say. It's a very British comedy and something that I think British audiences will really enjoy, and maybe other audiences will be like, oh, this is too weird for me. But it 100% wasn't too weird for me, and I loved every minute of it.
You're absolutely right. I think I love the scenes in the DIY shop and with the and the scenes depicting showing us his personality, and I do really like the vibe of it. And I think I will carry on watching. I think it's brilliant that you carried on watching all of it. Yeah, because I think it is a lovely kind of very British, very Mackenzie Crook show that I want to get behind. So yes, and over to James.
It was 100% too weird for me.
Why?
Yeah.
It's very quirky, it's very odd, and certainly at the beginning it's quite slight because it's just him going to work in a DIY store and then wandering around and then spinning tall tales for customers, which, to be fair, I quite enjoyed. Like, he's talking about mixing paint and new colours with one guy. It's genuinely very funny. He just goes on these incredibly, like, wildly improbable tales, and then you wait until the customer's just like, you're a mentalist, and walks off. Like, and he does that a few times. That's quite fun. But you're getting through the first, I'm like, I don't know where this show is going or what it's about. And then you come into like the whole homunculi thing. And I'm like, okay, if you'd pinned me down, I would never have guessed that this is where this was going. And I was just like, this is very quirky. It's very, very, it's very peculiar. It's a very peculiar show.
You say peculiar. I think it's utterly original.
I mean, it is. In that I've never seen anything like it.
You really need to watch episode 2. Episode 2, you'll fall in love with it.
Well, the thing is, barring the conversations he had with a couple of the customers, the humour didn't really resonate with me, so I didn't find it very funny. So without the kind of like impetus of a plot, you know, like if one of them had hemorrhoids and I needed to know what happened, then perhaps I would have stuck with it. But do you know what I mean? Without the plot to carry me, and because the humour doesn't really gel with me, I was like, I don't know that there's much here for me, because I don't really care that much what's going on, and I am unamused.
I'm really disappointed. I'm going to tell you exactly what... After this podcast, I'm going to tell you exactly what happens
okay,
in the whole
fine.
Thing. Because what else is really good is that by the end of it, it leaves something open, which is really exciting, because I hope that there is another season of this, because I loved it so much. But I think come to this with a real open mind and knowing that it is not a traditional British comedy. It is really quirky, but come to it thinking, God, this is going to be really original, something I've never seen before. The concept is original, and Mackenzie Crook has done something very special here.
Quirky, low-stakes British comedies are definitely not my thing as a rule, so don't take the fact that I didn't enjoy it as a ringing indictment.
Yeah. Quirky comedy can often end up being irritating and twee, and kind of being, you know, verging on twee and kind of a bit quirky for quirky's sake. And I found that a little bit as I was watching the first episode, but by the end of the first episode, and bearing in mind what you've seen the whole thing, Stefan, what you're saying about it, I am convinced that it's definitely worth carrying on with. And I think the quirk, it feels authentic and you know, like part of the whole DNA of the show rather than something that's been slapped on, you know.
That's absolutely right. Like, even just sort of kind of John Poynting's character, as the irritated neighbour, just his function in this is just to be perpetually annoyed, but so British that he can't really come out and say what he's really thinking. And even that level of frustration, I found it very amusing. I mean, a lot of it happens in a cul-de-sac, which is where he lives. It's very British, but please do not close your mind to this show because you'll be missing something special, is what I'd say. James.
Oh, James is going to close his mind too, but no one cares.
I'm going to tell him what happens.
I'm going to rewatch Deep Space Nine instead. Small Profits, then, which airs on BBC Two, when, Boydie?
Today, Monday, the 9th of February, 10 o'clock, 2026.
And what else is out this week? That is the question.
Oh, The Artful Dodger is back. Series 2. Who knew?
Who knew? Disney Plus. Knew indeed?
Tuesday.
That's on Tuesday. As we've mentioned, How to Get to Heaven from Belfast lands on Netflix on Thursday, and we're going to be covering it on Thursday on this week's Pilot Plus. And then, of course, there's Love Story, John F. Kennedy Jr., / Carolyn Bessette, snappily titled, and that's on Disney Plus, and that airs on Friday.
Absolutely. And I had a discussion with Steph about how the extent to which British people know that story of JFK Jr.
That was hilarious to me. Sorry, carry on, Boyd.
I didn't really know the story, yeah.
I don't know the story.
What?
Yeah, I think a lot of British people don't.
This is a massive part of history. Like the Kennedys, yeah. Do you not, like, know? Political history.
I know, but that element of the Kennedy story I didn't know. Yeah, it's interesting. But this is, by the way, can you believe it? Another Ryan Murphy production. To be fair, he's not that creatively involved. I don't think he's written or directed it, but it is part of his empire. So the Ryan Murphy machine continues apace, is what we should say.
All right, then what is our pick of the week?
Oh, Small Profits, hands down.
It's betrayal for me.
That is a betrayal. A betrayal of Steph.
I think, Boyd, if you watched 6 episodes of Small Profits, it would have been Small Profits.
Possibly. You're possibly right. I acknowledge that. Yeah.
I think you would enjoy the unconventional friendship and how much
Maybe.
Yeah, I really do.
I just really like James's impersonation of Alan Partridge just now when he was talking about you.
My pick of the week, oh, God, that's hard. It's either betrayal or cross. It's probably betrayal. Wow. I think it's betrayal.
ITV
just go
drama.
With it, it's betrayal.
I think it's betrayal.
Oh, my God, you love ITV
That's
now.
That's it, yeah.
You're ITV.
James
bitch.
And ITV sitting in a tree.
Wow.
Streaming or something. Anyway,
Can I just say one more thing about what's on this week?
Yes.
Becoming Victoria Wood, which is this feature-length documentary on You and Gold Thursday, 9 o'clock, about Victoria Wood, the woman, the legend, which includes Jessica Barden, the actress, doing dramatised readings of her own material and stuff. It's really good. So, yeah, I just wanted to mention that. Thanks.
Thank you, Boydie. Now, Steph.
Yes.
The Night Agent returns next week. And so does Kay. Coincidence? I don't think so.
No coincidence there. Although I do love The Night Agent. I'm having my tonsils out, guys.
You are having your tonsils out.
Everyone tells me it's absolutely... Well, yeah, apparently they don't do it very much as an adult, but I had tonsillitis 8 times last year, 8 times the year before, and 8 times the year before that. So they've got to come out.
That's quite consistent.
Yeah, it's too much. And they're coming out, and everyone tells me it's absolutely horrendous, and I have to have 2 weeks off.
Wow.
Yeah. Also, apparently it can alter your voice.
So you're welcome back. Oh, hello, it's Steph Seelan. I'm back on the podcast.
Which may be welcome to some people. Welcome news. I don't know. But yeah, who knows? But in great news, guys, my beloved Gabby, also known as Kay.
It's very confusing when you call her that.
Well, it isn't for the beloved listeners who watch Shrinking. Kay will be back for 2 weeks, 2 whole weeks of Kay.
2 whole weeks starting, I believe, with this week's Pilot Plus.
Starting with Pilot Plus.
Starting with this week's Pilot Plus. Kay will be back.
Oh.
Maybe we continue the Star Trek chat then.
Oh, Jesus, don't.
How exciting is that? What else is out next week? 56 Days lands on Prime. The Last Thing He Told Me comes back to Apple. Exciting times will be had by all. We are also going to have Jennifer Garner on this very podcast talking to Boyd for that show. But I don't know if that's going to be on next week's episode or the week after. So you have to wait and see. Isn't that exciting?
That is exciting.
Boyd, are you off to the
very
beach
exciting.
That's what, is that what's happening?
Yeah, I'm going to literally... Well, I need to get breakfast, frankly, if you really want to know. I'm absolutely starving, and then I'm going to stroll along the beach, yeah.
Oh, have a lovely time. Please remember to get me a souvenir gift.
Yes, and some kind of foundation thermos flask for me, please.
Okay.
All right, well, Boyd, enjoy the beach. I hope you have a good time.
Boyd, can you just stay on for 5 minutes after so I can... Not even 5 minutes, like a minute, because I want to tell you what happens in Small Profits.
I don't.
He's going to watch it.
What?
I want to
see it. Oh,
he wants to watch the show.
Okay, cool. Can can you watch it so we can talk about it, please?
All right, yeah,
We can talk about it on Pilot Plus when you return.
Yes. Okay.
Sounded a bit like this. Hello, Steph Seaman.
Oh, don't, God. Okay.
An unrecognisable. I'm very excited to hear what's happening. Maybe you'll be inexplicably Scouse when you return.
Who knows?
Yeah, I look forward to finding out. It's going to be fun. That is the Pilot TV podcast. We hope you enjoyed it in some degree. Please do feel free to head over to Apple Podcasts or any platform of your choice and leave us a 5 Star Trek rating, if only for that explainer that we had earlier on. And please do follow us on the social medias at Pilot TV Pod, at Boyd Hilton, at Steph Seelan, at James C. Dyer, at Kay Ribeiro. And remember, the postbag exists, and it is pilottv@empiremagazine.com. All right, we'll be back in your ears on Thursday when, among other things, you will witness the triumphant return of one Kate Ribeiro. It is Kate, isn't it? Kate Ribeiro.
Yes.
Right, that's right. Who can forget Kate? I've missed her.
I've missed her too.
Pilot out.